This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are beginning Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, Book 5, the longest one and my favorite one.
It's exciting.
Very exciting. It's, you know, opening of a whole different tonal chapter of the series, as Jess now knows. And are you still recovering from fake Moody?
Yes. You know, but I think that after that shock, and I really don't like when that happens when I read things. I think books make me, you know, the unreliable narrator can be fun sometimes, but then other times, it depends on my mood. I'm just like, so mad about it. But so, yeah, hopefully he shows up in his normal capacity here. I don't know if he does yet. If I'm just scanning the chapters, I think I did a quick, like, just glance at the chapter names. I think we meet some people that I have wanted to know soon, specifically Luna Lovegood. So I'm excited to read her.
Yes, but we are beginning with chapters 1 and 2 of Order of the Phoenix, Deadly Demented and A Peck of Owls. So, explain your thoughts. Quite a departure from the usual Dursley chapters. Do tell your feelings.
Yeah, before we got on, Mike, I said I actually didn't hate these chapters with the Dursleys, because usually it's just kind of like, ugh, we know your aunt and uncle are horrible people. But, I will go too far with the second chapter because there's quite the big reveal, almost reveal there with Harry's aunt. But there was just more substance to these chapters, and it wasn't just a complete rehashing of the other books. I think, you know, like as Amy said in the last book, if you've made it this far, you've probably read the other books. If you're just picking this up at random, stop and go back. So I appreciated not having to kind of like revisit all that again. I mean, there's, you know, it was very light. But I think there's definitely the assumption that, okay, you've read the other books, so let's just hit the ground running.
Yeah. And in terms of this being my favorite book, this has actually Half-Blood Prince used to be my favorite, like in childhood. Order of the Phoenix has bumped up to my favorite because a lot of the adult things I can relate to are more as an adult with certain traumatic experiences. But also I think Order of the Phoenix was always pretty high, if not my absolute favorite, because I think part of it is this nostalgia of I got into the Harry Potter books by the time 4 of them were published. So Order of the Phoenix was the very first one I had to wait for.
Oh, okay.
So I think there is that, nostalgic feel.
Yeah, that really does, you know, with so many things, like you could binge now in this time. It is kind of, I guess I'm a weirdo. I do like kind of like the week or so delay between shows, or sometimes with books, it frustrates me. I remember The Hunger Games. I was so upset. But
you made me think of, there's one book series that I read called like the Three Dark Crowns.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I really liked it. And actually, it was very like slow build up. But I was okay with that because I could immediately read the next book. But apparently, when the first book came out, a lot of people were really pissed off because they didn't like how little, you know, had been, or how little like action. It was all like all the prelude, set, you know, setting foundation before the action. got kicked, but because I didn't like read it when it was published, I didn't have that negative reaction, and I just, you know, sped through the books.
That's I guess with the Hunger Games, I didn't have Catching Fire, and I was just so like moved and enamored with the first story. I just was like, I need Catching Fire right now, but it didn't come out until like months later. So, but I like that you mentioned that you have kind of like the nostalgic anticipation kind of associated with this book. I think that's
yeah. So we begin with Harry Potter in the flower bed, listening under the open window, because he is trying to hear the news. And anytime he's tried to like be in the living room and watch the news like a normal person, his aunt and uncle give him crap.
And simply because they're basing this off of Dudley's like disinterest in the news, which made me think, were you a person as a young person, were you somebody that like cared about the news, or were you just kind of like, oh, that's boring?
I cared about the Middle Eastern notion of news. Henceforth, I got a master's in Middle Eastern studies. You know, probably this is a little young. So at this specific age of being like 15, yeah, probably wasn't. It probably didn't become interested till at least like 17, you know, 16 at the absolute earliest. But it just made me think of, it's interesting to read this notion of, because in the 90s when this is going on, like not watching the news is considered like, you know, again, a bad thing of you're not informed and stuff. But I feel like this has a whole different, you know, change or interpretation when all the crap of like the fake news, Trump and post-Trump. And, yeah, you know, all of that stuff, or not even just that whole fight and dumpster fire, but the idea of heard so many people say that literally for their mental health, they have to stop watching the news.
I've been there for sure. I think I was the same way. Like I had things that would interest me, but I wasn't one to sit and watch the news when I was 15. I kind of knew about things going on from different sources. Not fake news sources, but you're right. It just kind of, everything just kind of went sideways. And, but Harry's watching the news for a very specific reason, because he is looking for signs of Voldemort.
Yeah. Causing chaos onto the world. And he's not hearing any.
Right. And it's kind of this is why something that happens later on. And I think in this chapter, the clash of these two worlds is so kind of jarring here in a little bit, because, you know, I think Sirius Black was on the news, right? Like in
yes,
previous
he chapters. Was.
Okay. But Voldemort, if I'm remembering correctly, he's kind of barely even cracking the Wizarding World news too. They're not really, I mean, people know what's going on, but everybody's being very secretive about it.
Well, certainly Harry's getting the Daily Prophet. So, you know, the Daily Prophet hasn't reported anything about Voldemort being back. You know, probably because Fudge is not wanting that shit to be printed. And so nothing seems out of the ordinary in the Wizarding World, nor the Muggle world. And, oh, what was I going to say? What I found very interesting is, what was it? What are you doing loitering like underneath our window? And I just honed in on the use of our window, because it's defining themselves against Harry. Like Harry lives there. So it's not like, what are you doing underneath the window?
Right.
Like just the very specific, you know, possessive pronoun of our, say, like not even acknowledging that he is a resident of that house.
They like really, they can't, they, I think they're kind of past the point where like, okay, there are going to be consequences if we are too horrible to this kid, but there is something, you know, they can be like verbally horrible. It just makes me think of, I guess I'm watching a show about sexual misconduct, and it's like, well, but I didn't do anything wrong on paper. It's like, well, they're not, you know, it's up for debate if they're like being physically abusive with him, but they're just being mean and kind of saying like, this is not your house. It's just mean. And that's all kind of they are. It's just mean.
And so, like, Harry hears Vernon and Petunia talking to each other, and it's like, we're debtors. He's out for tea at the Polkisses. He's got so many little friends. He's so popular. And Harry repressed a snort with difficulty. So I'm just curious, like, you know, for us in the U.S., it would be considered, like, very pompous to say, oh, I'm going for tea with whoever. Like, I'm just wondering in a UK context, like, this is, like, normal even for, like, a buff guy like Dudley to be like, oh, he's out for tea with his friends. But, of course, that's not what he's doing. He's terrorizing the neighborhood.
Yeah. They also, as a person that used to go to a boxing gym, I'm, like, so disappointed in Dudley's lack of restraint. But,
you know, yeah, Dudley, I wish Dudley would do Tai Chi.
Yeah, he that would help him. That would do good things for him.
Yeah, like, he needs to do one of those martial arts that is specifically more defensive heavy. Like, what, I forget, you know, Avatar The Last Ender, I forget the style of martial art that they based airbending off of.
I have no idea.
But yeah, he could use a little Tai Chi. I think that would be awesome. Yeah. But no, he is just with boxing and let's see. And Harry sees, what was it? He hears a crack and that freaks him out.
Right. Like there's the little bit of debate, I think within his mind, like maybe this was like a car, you know, backing out. That's not the right terminology, but it's enough to, you know, startle him and, you know, kind of wake him up and have some problems, but he's trying to rationalize it for a little bit. It's like, maybe it's just nothing.
Yeah. Cause to him immediately it sounded like someone apparating or disapparating, basically the crack you make when you like teleport.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So, yes. And he's so instinctually, he's so convinced of that is that, yeah, he pulls his wand out like in the middle of outside. And
go ahead. Sorry.
No, just, and Vernon grabs his throat.
It was like, am I reading The Simpsons? Like, is this Bart and Homer Simpson all of a sudden? But like, yeah, that, which is very violent and horrible, but he is very upset, obviously, because anything magical or with a hint of magic just kind of throws Uncle Vernon into a tizzy.
And yeah, and just the immediate suspicion that Harry did the magic.
Right. Any sort of anything is probably Harry's fault. That's kind of like their default.
That's their default. And it's, this will tie into something later in the second chapter, but so I'll wait for it then.
Okay.
Yep. And so it ultimately, he's like, what are you doing out here watching the news? I don't believe you. Your lot doesn't get into our news. And it's like, shows how much you know.
He is sassy here and he is sassy to everybody. I got a little problem with his sassiness with Dudley, but we'll get there. But yeah,
he's always been on the sassy side. And, you know, I think sassiness for him, again, is the type of humor of surviving how horrible and awful this place is, and he went and they just didn't end up a total nutcase.
Yes, that's true. I guess I would see it as provocation, and which is like the last thing I would want to do. But Harry and I are very different people. He is a Gryffindor. I am a Hufflepuff. So there
yeah,
we go.
And it's like listening to the news. Well, it changes every day, you see.
Yeah, sassy. That is so sassy.
Yeah, it's like, oh no, you didn't.
Right. God. And Uncle Vernon is just not having that. Yeah.
And it's like, the owls keep coming. It's like, they're not giving me news. We know you're up to something funny. We're not stupid, you know? Well, that's news to me.
Again with the sass, man. This is a heavy, sassy Harry Potter.
Mic drop and then go storming off the front lawn down the street.
Oh, gosh. To like a park, which,
Yeah, to a park, and he's just sitting there thinking, and we are getting the recap in the sense that he's kind of been stuck at the Dursleys for a month. He's trying to figure out what's going on. Like, Ron and Hermione have been sending him very vague letters and saying, obviously, we can't disclose anything if the letter gets intercepted, but we're working really hard here. And so he has a severe case of FOMO.
For sure. And he kind of... he acts out like he gets mad at them. You know, they're trying to protect him, but he's mad because he's like, I'm just stuck here. My friends are out living there, you know, wizarding life, and they can't, they can't even help it. What does he say? He was so angry at them that he had thrown both their birthday presents of honeydew chocolate away unopened, though he had regretted this after eating the wilted salad Aunt Petunia had provided for dinner that night. So,
yeah. And he's also pissed off at Sirius because Sirius is basically giving him similar, like, lip service. We can't mention 2 months. And it's especially irksome to Harry to get have Sirius lecture him, the guy who escaped Azkaban prison to go and commit the murder he was put in there for, and then on the run with the hippogriff.
Right. Yeah. Harry sometimes forgets that, like, he's a kid, and this was kind of his irritation. I mean, while not misplaced, I was thinking Harry's never worked in HR because, like, I've had to do those cryptic kind of messages before. But
You know, in terms of Harry, you know, being angry about everything, because his whole thing is, you know, I had to go through the trauma of this crazy cult ritual. This guy stole my blood and has a body now, and now I'm just here sitting pretty at the Dursleys. What the fuck?
Right. Yeah.
So that's his mindset, and that's a very reasonable mindset to have. Like, someone, if they didn't, like, you know, owls aside, Dumbledore's got that phoenix. You know, Dumbledore could get information securely to Harry if he wanted to.
Right. Yeah. So we can empathize with his frustration. Sometimes it's a little misplaced. And I mean, I don't think anybody would want to spend any more time with the Dursleys than they had to. I love this image, though, of him just, like, sitting on a swing that, you know, Dudley and his friends haven't busted, and I don't know, staring off into the distance. That's kind of seems very, I think we've all been there. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
No, we've all been there. And so eventually he bumps into Dudley, which for a long time, like, they don't see him. And, you know, Harry's very much wanting to be like, just come at me, just wait, just give me a reason, give me a reason, give me a reason.
He is, like, I did not like this. Like, Harry made me very disappointed. He's just provoking Dudley. And I guess, like, he's got it. Some of this, I'm like, is this just teenage boy stuff? Like, you got to get your frustrations out. Not because Dudley is now apparently jacked or whatever, but because I was just like, you don't kind of lower yourself. I don't know. I had conflicting feelings about this little exchange between Dudley and Harry.
Yeah, well, Harry's demonstrating the very human, he wants to abuse someone that he has the power to abuse because he feels out of control of his life.
That is very true. It is very sad, but you are exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And so Harry catches up with Dudley and is like, that's your name now? How long have you been Big D?
Oh, well, my God. Like, what were we thinking with this name? But it was funny. Yeah.
Oh, but, like, cool name, but you'll always be Ickle Duddykins to me.
Ickle Duddykins, and he, like, he does not love that. He's pissed, you know? And, I mean, that's something to be said, too. Dudley does have, like, physical power over Harry, but Dudley is also very aware of Harry's capabilities. Even though he can't use magic, has that stopped him before? No.
Yeah, it's, And of course, like any bully, Dudley can dish it but cannot take it.
Yes. That is why I am not a bully, because I cannot take it. Therefore, I do not dish.
Yeah. And so so they're going back and forth, and Dudley finally blurts out, you're not this, like, brave at night. And he's like, it's nighttime now, Dudley. That's when the sun goes down.
Again with the sass, man. And then Dudley is just like, hey. And then, of course, you know, Harry's like, oh, shit. You guys heard me. you know, that's kind of like, here he is kind of being all sassy and whatever. And then kind of his nightmares have gone a little further than his own brain.
Yeah. And Dudley's like, don't kill Cedric. Don't kill Cedric. Who's Cedric? Your boyfriend? Whoa, we just got homophobic very quickly.
I was kind of like, I wonder how that was played, because like, Harry could have been like, no, he's not my boyfriend. And
it's just interesting to me because I grew up in a rural town and, you know, in Southern Oregon. And I don't know even why, but some girl, not even a real friend, like some girl started spreading this rumor that I was a lesbian. And then I remember being like so freaked out about this and, you know, telling a teacher like, this girl's going around saying I'm a lesbian when I'm not, which, you know, because, you know, unless you lived in a small town, like being labeled as like gay is one of the worst things like socially for you. And I wish I had the know-it-all to say, so what if I was a lesbian? I'm not, but what if I was? You got a problem with that, punk?
I know. It's so hard. And I grew up in a small town and I had lesbian rumors to the point, to the day I left, which you can think that's fine. I was dating my best friend. We're both married to men, but whatever. I wasn't. Also, there was just a dumb, ignorant association because one of my best friends is a gay man. So they, for some reason, thought I was also, I'm like, you guys make no sense. But the, I just kind of, in my mind, I'm like, this is homophobic. I'm guessing at the time this was, you know, Harry was like thinking about this. And during the time period, it was meant as homophobic. But I think in modern times, you could handle it just like, mm-hmm. he wasn't my boyfriend. And just kind of, you know, do the thing that I wish I would have done when I was a kid and not be offended, but just kind of disregard it. Like,
yeah. And Dudley pushes, and Harry, you know, backs him into an alleyway. You know, Dudley says, like, you know, you think you're a big man carrying that thing, don't you? That thing you're holding. And I'm just like, I have such a dirty mind, but my imagery just went immediately phallic.
Oh, I mean, we started off hot with Big D here, so, and then we're talking about, believe me, mine goes the same place, but I'm like, I try not to say anything because I am like, oh my God, Amy must think, like, I have the sense of humor of a 15-year-old boy.
I am tempted to go re-listen to Fox and a Foxhound and see how phallic Kevin made this when he was reading it and discussing it with Amanda.
Well, then if Kevin can go down that route, then I don't feel as bad.
Yeah. So, but that aside, Harry's cornered Dudley and is like, you know, never bring that up to me. Don't ever talk about that again. And it's like, do you understand me? And then what happens?
Who? Before there's Dudley and Harry fanfic, there has to be, right?
Cousin incest?
I forgot they're cousins. That has never stopped anybody, okay? Fan fiction writers, that has never stopped you. So.
No, it hasn't. But probably.
Maybe. I'll have to look. Not that I want to read it. I'm just curious. Okay, so now I'm out of the dirty corner. This really surprised me, to be quite honest. I knew what it was when things were getting down that path, but I thought, like, this is not a small thing. And then I kind of had to think up through, like, muggles versus wizards and the fact that it could, like, you know, control a muggle just like it would a wizard. I don't know why I thought there was a difference, but for a second I did. So and obviously it rocked Dudley's world. So
yeah, so Dudley as a muggle is in the position where he cannot see the Dementor, he cannot see the scary hooded figure of death, but he can feel its effects.
Okay, so it's just like a wash of emotion that comes.
It's a wash of, you know, emptiness, coldness, darkness. Not seeing what the source is.
Okay, that makes better sense. So it's like he's hit with like this insane wave of depression all of a sudden. So interesting.
Exactly, and you know, Dudley at first thinks it's coming from Harry, and so punches Harry, and Harry loses his wand, and you know. It's like with the tongue-tied toffee back in book four when Fred and George fed it to Dudley and, you know, the Dursleys were scared to let Mr. Weasley fix it. It's like, yeah, they're scared, but it's like at this point, after so many years, at over a decade, they've had plenty of time to familiarize themselves with the magical world, but still they choose ignorance. And so, you know, some people say, oh, of course, you know, Dudley doesn't understand. He's frightened. Of course, he's going to punch Harry, you know, and that stuff. But I'm just like, no, like he's had like, that's like me thinking that I have the right to go like punch an Asian person for COVID or something like that.
Yeah, it's very misplaced. And he's, I mean, I guess in the environment he's grown up with, everything weird that happens is Harry's fault. Like, no matter what, it's Harry's fault. So it would have served him well to know something, which we kind of...
Yeah, so Harry, you know, has to cast it three times, but finally he's able to summon his badass Patronus stag.
Yes, I love with the love the Patronus showing up, the enormous silver stag.
I saw a meme, not really a meme, just a little post on Facebook on a Harry Potter group that was talking about like in Finland to try and like stop deer from getting like hit, they were painting their antlers with this like luminescent like glow in the dark stuff, and so they had, and so there was this like it was a failed test because the paint wore off too quickly, but it showed this picture of just this this like reindeer whatever with this huge glowing antlers, and it's like, it's the Patronus coming to save the day.
That's badass. I would like to see a couple of those. I mean, I'll just pretend. I don't care if it's antlers or painted, I'm gonna pretend. It's awesome.
And the thing Harry hears in his head when the Dementors close, bow to death, Harry. It might even be painless. I would not know. I have never died.
Ugh, creepy.
Yeah, but we get Patronus Stag, and Harry, being the hero that he is, wards off the two Dementors.
And then drags Dudley back to the, well, we haven't got there yet, but he encounters somebody.
Yes, who does he encounter?
Good old Mrs. Fig, who is my girl, because she's a cat lady, like I long to be. But yeah, always trust cat ladies. Yes. That's my advice.
Always trust the cat ladies. Yeah. Don't put it away, idiot boy. What if there are more of them around? Oh, I'm going to kill Mundungus Fletcher.
Okay, I felt very stupid, and maybe that was just me being forgetful, but... That is the first time I've ever seen Mungus Fletcher's name, right?
This is the first time this is the first time us ever meeting Mundungus Fletcher.
Okay.
Arthur Weasley did mention Mundungus Fletcher in passing as early as book two.
Okay. Okay. So the name, kind of like Lestrange, like I know that's a very popular family, but, and I know a little bit about them, but okay. 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 So I don't feel like such a jackass. I was just like, who is this person? So yeah. Good to know.
So now we move on to chapter two, A Peck of Owls. And just everything is going topsy-turvy for Harry. He goes from not knowing anything, like people keeping him in the dark, keeping him very sheltered, and then boom, it's Dementors, and boom, oh, my cat lady babysitter of my childhood knows about magic.
Right. Which, I mean, he doesn't really have time to process the fact that, like, would that not have been lovely to have that there? But, you know, and she kind of even says, like, I couldn't be nice to you because then, you know, that would have been worse for you and blah, blah, blah.
It's like when you know someone's parents are pieces of shit, but you know they're not shitty enough to like call Child Protective Services, so you don't want to call them out because then they deny you access to the kid who's decent.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, that it's like that whole dynamic, and he's like, and she's like, I really wanted to tell you, like I wanted, you know, to tell you stories and I wanted you to enjoy yourself, but I knew the Durs. And that's just sad, like, you know, the Dursleys are so vindictive. Like, it's not even, oh, just stay out of our way, and if you like going to Mrs. Fig's, whatever, just stay out of your way. It's both stay out of our way and be miserable.
Right. Yeah. Like that's, I don't know. I think I've been in situations where it's like, if I'm too nice to this person, and this, these are toxic places I'm talking about, that somebody would pay for it. And it's just like, that's effed up. But yeah.
Yeah. And Mrs. Fig is like, you know, keep your wand out. You know, talk about the reasonable restriction of underage sorcery. This was exactly what Dumbledore was afraid of. What's the end? The street. And so, what did she say? Like, you know, so basically Mundungus left because he wanted to go pick up some cauldrons that fell off a broom. Basically just, you know, things trying to, you know, buy, get and sell things that came off, that fell off the end of a truck.
He's like, is he like an eBay guy or something? Like, I
basically, he was pursuing other business opportunities before technically his shift to keep an eye on Harry was done.
Oh,
and so Mrs. Fig didn't like that, and so sent, was it Mr. Tinkles? Mr. Tibbles under the car to tail Harry.
Hey, that's, I knew that little cat was going to come back in some capacity. So,
yeah. Did you think, were you thinking it was McGonagall or something?
I just had a feel. I was like, you know, a cat, if it's mentioned there, it's going to come back. Like it's just, something could be that's really mundane and skipped over, but I didn't think it was McGonagall, but I knew it was somebody.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a loud crack and a strong smell of mingled drink and stale tobacco filled the air as a squat, unshaven man in a tattered overcoat materialized right in front of them. And she just keeps hitting him with her plastic bag of wet cat food.
Oh, that would hurt.
Oh, someone's got to tell Dumbledore. Yes, they have. And between every like swing, and it had better be you, and you can tell him why you weren't here.
We have a young person who's in a lot of danger, and he like didn't do a good job, so I can understand her frustration.
Well, you know, basically we don't know the whole thing, but the kind of tidbits we're getting from Mrs. Fig is that Dumbledore wanted to keep Harry safe and like prevent him from using magic at all cost.
Yeah.
And so it is a big deal that the minute Mundungus left, shit hit the fan, and Harry was forced to use magic, you know, to save his life and that of Dudley's.
Right, which I, as soon as he did that, I'm like, this is going to come back in some capacity. If it doesn't, which it does, but this chapter is just chaos. Like that's what it made me think of. This is chaos.
So yeah, and then ultimately Fig walks them back to the house, and Fig leaves, and Harry's like, wait, don't go, I want to know. But Mrs. Fig had already set off at a trot, carpet slippers flopping, string bag clinking.
I feel like we'll see her again. I hope.
And then Harry rings the doorbell, and Petunia sees Dudley and Harry, and then Dudley immediately throws up on the doormat.
What a mess this guy is. Like, and of course it is obviously Harry's fault. Like,
yeah, it's all Harry's fault. And first owl comes.
Yes, with, as suspected, his expulsion from Hogwarts.
His expulsion letter. And then we get a second letter.
It's the, like, don't leave your house, I'm talking to Dumbledore letter. Yeah,
it's from Arthur. Dumbledore's just arrived at the ministry and he's, you know, working on your behalf, blah, blah, blah. And then we've got Harry trying to... You know, well, Dudley's trying to explain what happened, and Harry said it was a bunch of Dementors, and Petunia says they guard the wizard prison Azkaban. Tell me your thoughts.
I had to read that twice because I was like, that was Petunia, because she is so, you know, first of all, I hate when people do this. Like, sometimes maybe I don't know a word and I stumble over it, but when Vernon is calling him the Demendes and all kinds of stuff, it's just so annoying to me. But with Petunia, it's like I said, I read that. They guard the wizard prison, said Aunt Petunia. And I was like, wait a minute. So throughout this chapter, she gives little like breadcrumbs. Like she knows more. she's definitely been censoring it for, you know, her husband, who is like, just can't stand the thought of anything he doesn't fully understand. Almost made a religious joke, not going to do it. Mm-hmm. But I was surprised, and she surprised me again throughout this chapter.
Yeah, and she's like, I heard that awful boy telling her about them years ago, she said jerkily. If you mean my mom and dad, why don't you use their names, said Harry.
Yeah, and Petunia's and Lily's relationship.
Yeah, and specifically the fact that, that of all things, you know, Petunia's picked out the wizard prison Azkaban. Like that specifically, does that mean back in book three when Sirius was on the Muggle news that she probably figured out that he had escaped from Azkaban?
That is a good question that I would never have thought of. So I don't know. I also would, if anybody wants to play Harry Potter trivia, pick Amy for your team.
Oh my god. They're doing that Harry Potter like Hogwarts house tournament where Helen Mirren like hosting it.
Yeah.
So Nat, my co-host for Podcaster's Landing, she was watching it because she's got COVID and nothing and has nothing else to do. And she was watching it, actually rage watching it. And she was like messaging me on Discord. And she's like, Amy, these questions suck. You need to write the questions. They have 50 points for the silliest, dumbest questions. And they're treating it like it's just for like little kids.
Oh man. Well, you would smoke everybody. I know you would.
I would smoke everybody with my literary illusions and whatnot.
There you go.
Anyway, so we get this. So yeah, put a pin in that. Aunt Petunia clearly knows more than she's letting on or has suppressed a lot, censored a lot. And we get the third letter.
Yeah. And this time it's basically like, okay, you're not expelled. But yeah, we are going to have a, but maybe, we don't know yet. You have to come to this hearing at August 12th.
August 12th. And then.
Yeah, and this is kind of effed up. Like, and Uncle Vernon is like, do your lot have the death penalty? He added as a hopeful afterthought. I'm like, dude, chill. He's 14, right? At this point, 14, 15?
15, yeah.
Okay, he's 15. Like, good Lord. Like, what a jerk.
Yep. Harry was always pulling a roll of parchment out of the aisles. He was so convinced that this letter had to be from Dumbledore that for once he was disappointed when it was Sirius's handwriting. Arthur's just told us what's happened. Don't leave the house again, whatever you do. Okay, Sirius, you know, read the room.
Right.
Like, yeah. Or at least, like, we will explain everything tomorrow. Just don't do anything stupid.
Right.
Yeah, if I'm to that point of frustration like Harry is, and I'm just like, you better give me a definite like date that I'm gonna hold you to as if you had written it in blood, and if you break it, then it's gonna be hell to pay because I'm a sweet Hufflepuff, but like Badgers, we are so very cute and adorable, but we will fuck you up.
Yeah, well, this is like so confusing because then I think that right after this, it's like Harry is like about to storm out of the house or something.
And Uncle Vernon wants to kick him out because basically it's like, okay, if this Voldy thing is back and Dementors are coming out after you, then hit the road. We don't need you endangering us.
Right. Or Dudley, because God forbid. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then Dudley kind of says, you know, talks about his experience without knowing what has just happened, but he's talking about you know, suck the happiness out of you and all of that. So there's a big question mark in what was the thing that Dudley, you know, rocked his world there too.
Yep. And then finally the last owl and letter, but it is not for Harry.
No, this was great. It is for Miss Aunt Petunia.
Yes. And it says, remember my last Petunia.
So I'm going to assume that means my last Howler? I don't know. It's very, she obviously knows exactly what it means, but I, the reader, do not.
Yes. Do you have any theories?
Now I'm going to think, okay, if I'm just kind of not going too far back, I would assume it would be, you know, like she has to take care of Harry. That there wasn't any question about it. But I feel like that might be the too obvious answer, and it might have to do something, have something to do with something related to her sister pre-Harry. But I don't know.
Do you have an idea who sent it?
Snape. Mm. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Alrighty then. Put a pin in that. That will come up later. And yeah. Ultimately she says he has to stay and they banish him to his room. And that is the end of chapter 2.
Pretty exciting little chapter there. A lot of unexpected Hogwarts letters to unexpected people.
Yeah, no silly recaps this time.
I know, it was nice. I liked that. That was great.
Like, of all sort of magical things, did you ever anticipate that Dementors would show up in a Muggle suburb?
No, not at all. I mean, that was kind of... It was really interesting, especially given Dudley's having this experience. But no, it not quite Mad Eye Moody shook me, but you know, it was pretty interesting to put that horrible thing there. So,
alrighty then, shall we move to Gothic Geek Out?
Yes.
What was yours?
I mean, I went with the Dementors because I felt like I just imagined Privet Drive being very sunny and just kind of the polar opposite of how I envision Hogwarts, which I mean, it can be sunny at Hogwarts, but I always envision kind of overcast and gray and gothy. The Dementors and Dudley's experience with them was the most goth it got for me. In those chapters.
Yeah, of course, Dementors are the obvious one. And I think it's not even they are appearing in a context that's appropriate for them. Again, like at the school, like when Sirius Black had escaped and like those things, like this is totally, you know, out of left field. So it's literally like some ghosts coming in to terrorize you.
I mean, ghosts coming in, you had me, but the terrorizing is bad news.
Yeah, so of course, you gotta have the numbers. But also, I also made note of, you know, in our very first gothic geek out back in Philosopher's Stone, like the gothic concept of evil aunt and uncle. And yes. how much of the guilt tripping and the, like, being abusive, but you should still be grateful because we could have sent you to an orphanage, but we didn't. All of that shite.
Yeah, that's the horrible family is a very good gothic thing.
Mm-hmm. And then, but yeah, other than that, those are the pretty obvious ones.
Yeah.
Yep. Again, not too creative. It'll get more creative because, again, the world expands a lot in this story. So
cool. I mean, yeah, come when we're, to be honest, I think in the previous Privet Drive episodes, it's very, or the Dursleys episodes, it's kind of hard to get the goth in there.
Yep. And now we move on to Tarot card of the day. And I'm so happy with the card I picked at random because it was the Hermit. Hermit, card number 9 in the Major Arcana. The Hermit shows that you are taking a break from everyday life to draw your energy and attention inward and find the answers you seek deep within your soul. You realize that your most profound sense of truth and knowledge is within yourself and not in the distractions of the outside world. You are leaving behind the mundane to set off on a journey of self-discovery led only by your inner wisdom and guiding light. Now is the perfect time to go on a weekend retreat or a sacred pilgrimage, anything in which you can contemplate your motivations, personal values, and principles to get closer to your authentic self. So, the whole ethos of the Hermit obviously is to retreat into your inner world, and that is very much what Harry has been doing for the last month. Like, certainly in chapter 2 was the first time he had admitted to his aunt and uncle that Voldemort was back, so he's been dealing with that all by himself, trying to figure out, you know, what's going on in the news by himself and just trying to piece everything together by himself, because not, of course, it Dursleys are hopeless and worthless, but even his own friends and his own godfather are not helping to fill in the blanks at this point.
Yeah, I think I'm the Hermit Harry. That's kind of funny alliteration there.
Harry the Hermit.
Jess the Hermit. That's what I'm about to be. you know, he. That's kind of the only thing he can do, and I think that's a really relatable thing for a kid or for a teenager to retreat into their inner world. And maybe I'm just, you know, speaking for myself a little bit, but yeah, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, let me see if there's anything more specific. Like, the hermit invites you to retreat into your private world and experience a deep sense of seclusion and introspection. You know that you need to take on this journey alone or with a small intimate group or spiritually minded people. When you allow yourself to tune into your inner guiding light, you will hear the answers you need. Maybe upside down is more the bad sense of the hermit. Either you're not taking enough time for personal reflection or you're taking too much. If you struggle to connect with your spiritual self, the hermit reversed encourages you to create more space to meditate and reflect. So yeah, you know, upright, the hermit is supposed to be like the good sort of solitude for the sake of spiritual awakening and, you know, attaining wisdom, you know, getting enlightenment, all that nice stuff, you know. But Harry's demonstrating the very corrupt form of seclusion and isolation.
Yeah, he is, and kind of letting his anger out, like I said, in a kind of rather unattractive way. But it's also, if I'm empathetic, I can understand why he's so frustrated.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Anything more for the hermit?
No, but that was a good one.
The only thing else I think of as being a hermit is Aunt Petunia. You know, clearly hanging on to certain elements of what she knows about the wizarding world. And, you know, she's not talking about this with her husband. So all she has is, you know, trapped with her own thoughts and her own feelings and whatever the implications were about her relationship with her sister, and just sitting on that and not dealing with it at all.
Yeah, I think Aunt Petunia, I mean, and just let me preface this with, this is not my experience as a woman, so don't think I'm coming from personal experience, but I think a lot of women experience something similar to Petunia, where they kind of have to shrink themselves for their spouse. So we don't really know what, or I don't know what she would have been like, you know, had she not married Uncle Vernon. Like, was she as repulsed by the wizarding world pre-Uncle Vernon? I don't know.
Yes, that's interesting, because, you know, the actress who played Aunt Petunia, you know, is a lesbian. And so I've actually read a few fanfics of alternate universes where she doesn't marry and ends up, you know, being with a woman.
Good for her, man. That sounds like that might have been a happier life. Well, maybe as long as she didn't marry like a female Uncle Vernon, that would be horrible. But but yeah, so, you know, she's kind of, I am curious about her kind of path forward. Not that she's never stood up to Uncle Vernon, really. She's kind of, even when the truth does come out, she kind of veils it a little bit for his, you know, comfort. But interesting character. She just became more intriguing. But I mean, she's still horrible, but I'm curious about her now.
I've always seen the dynamic of Petunia and Vernon as, she married Vernon when she was at the height of her like resentment towards Lily, and her, the zenith of her hatred towards Lily and magic and everything. And I think maybe if she hadn't married Vernon, that maybe that could have eventually toned down, but because she married someone like Vernon, it never went away. And if she is having sort of feelings of hatred towards magic and everything, then certainly she's never been in a position to express that.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting character, Miss Aunt Petunia. Miss Aunt Petunia.
Yeah. Alrighty then. The next card from the Black Moon Astrology deck is Mercury Retrograde.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Let me grab my little booklet. And I was like, oh, this is a good card for this chapter, because this is where all the shit hit the fan. And that's when everything goes wrong, is with Mercury Retrograde.
Yep. I think there's a Mercury retrograde coming up too.
No, don't tell me. I cannot deal with another one.
I know.
The last one fucked me up so bad. Anyway, so for those of you who don't know, like in the New Age spirituality astrology communities, Mercury retrograde is considered like, that's where all the bad things happen. It's where technology breaks down. It can be where communication breaks down. It can be when travel plans are disruptive, and it's just a very, it's one of the most common astronomical phenomenon that even people outside the New Age sphere know that, oh, Mercury retrograde, that's bad.
Yeah, I have heard reread, reevaluate, reassess, like with retrograde, just review everything. And the dates are, it says January 14th. So keep an eye out.
Yeah, basically Mercury retrograde, it's, you know, about 3 or 4 times a year, Mercury goes through a motion called retrograde, which means to go back or retreat. And even though it's technically not, it's just in a position in its orbit where from our position on Earth, it's an optical illusion that looks like it's going backwards. So the retrograde movement of the planet is just an illusion because the Earth is orbiting the Sun at a different speed than Mercury and the other planets. Still, from an astrological point of view, planets in retrograde motion cause potential potent effects on the Earth below. No planet retrograde goes as often as Mercury because it is never more than 28 degrees from the Sun. And because of this, it has given us the dubious phrase that when something goes wrong, many exclaim, Mercury must be in retrograde. So firstly, when this card comes up in a reading, back up all of your equipment, your computers, cell phone numbers, and address books, and anything to do with technology or medicines. You know, basically how long, you know, you will want to carefully go over any contracts you sign. Like, again, basically anything that possibly can go wrong will go wrong.
Yeah.
And for me, I feel like my Mercury retrograde things, it's been less about technology and like logistics, but more like relational communicative things that like shit hits the fan.
That's like, that's the, to me, that's the biggest thing. And I feel like, you know, personally, it's just personal communication. It's just, it's shaky because what Mercury is the planet of communication. And it's, you know, if you misunderstand some, if you think something, maybe ask again for clarification. I think that's kind of retrograde policy from my understanding. And with, this is a, I think it's a very appropriate card for these chapters. Because Harry is constantly misunderstood and communication is constantly skewed. And the Dursleys themselves are basically freaking Mercury retrograde for Harry.
Yeah, because like they're asking him questions like, and they're like, he's telling them the truth and they don't believe the truth. And it's just like, why are you even asking the questions then? And so, yeah, communication with the Dursleys is all out of whack. Communication with Ron, Harry, and Sirius is out of whack. Yeah. Just everything going wrong. Dementors swooping down. Again, all the chaos of the communication when the shit does hit the fan, like, stay in the house. We're going to take your wand. We're not going to take your wand. Go to the hearing. Stay in the house.
Yeah, it's just chaos. Like, that chapter is just chaos. Like, nobody knows what is going on, including like the people that are making those big decisions. They're kind of, they're all over the place too.
Yeah. And basically they should have put in this letter that, oh, Dumbledore's making us give you a hearing.
Yeah.
Like a petulant child.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
But yeah, two very good cards for poor emo Harry all by his lonesome at number four. Perfect draft.
Yes, and Amy's witchy powers were on full display tonight, pulling those cards. So, good job.
Yay. Alrighty then. And then the last exercise is, of course, fan fiction time. Don't tell me you're going to kill Dudley.
No. And I'm not going to go the gross, weird route, the like flowers in the attic route. So like, no, I'm going to go the really, really boring route. Maybe. I don't know. I think it would be kind of fun, but like, what if Mrs. Fig had told Harry that, you know, what if she had taken the opposite approach with the Dursleys? You know, she had this thought that like, if anything pleasant that you get to experience, the Dursleys are going to be against. So what if she was like, you know what, let's talk about it. You've been Hogwarts and, you know, kind of went that route. How would Harry's life have been different? You know, maybe he would have been a little better prepared for some of those things. I don't know.
So if Mrs. Fig had told him about Hogwarts before or after he became a student, or
like, you know, okay, let me back up. So let's say he did his first year at Hogwarts, you know, we know she's kind of like keeping an eye out for him. And then he comes back and she's like, so Hogwarts, huh? Pretty cool. And then they're kind of like have a little friendship. Like, I think
that would have been so sweet and wholesome and just, yeah, they could have tea together and she could tell him about things in the wizarding world and he could sit there and have kitties in his lap while he listened to stories.
That would be like so lovely for him. It would have been so, I mean, you know, he would have dreaded summer a little less, maybe.
Well, it kind of makes sense when Harry was very, very young and didn't know about Hogwarts yet, even though I think, you know, she could have tried and pulled it off of like pretending to not be that great, but then like secretly, like, it's like, Harry, we're playing a game, like pretend you hate my house, but you actually love it, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, maybe like, but if Harry was too young for something like that, even after when he first went to Hogwarts and she like, you know, saw him at the supermarket and again, like, hey, like, you know, come to have tea at my house. Tell me all about your, you know, escapades at school. And like, they could have had a nice little like mentor
relationship. Yeah, why not? Like, give him something when he's away from all of his friends and maybe keep that connection to the magical world. But
I guess with this revelation, it's still sort of unclear of how much of her like being a boring cat lady, like how much of that is just a farce, mm-hmm. or even with her knowing magical stuff, like she's still to Harry in his mind, even if she knows about the magical world, she's still a very boring cat, you know, neighborhood cat, old cat lady.
Yeah. I mean, maybe she's like, I don't know. I hope we are not done with her because I'm intrigued. Petunia and Mrs. Fig are like interesting characters that I usually don't care anything about. So,
yeah. My what if was, what if Dudley had come to Harry's defense? Like, not specifically in the Dementor like situation in the moment, but where instead of like just accusing Harry like something crazy happened, therefore it's Harry's fault, like he could say like, I felt cold and like dark, but then Harry brought this magical stag and everything was happy again. Like, you know, what if Dudley had, you know, been a little bit more gracious to Harry in that moment?
That's an interesting question, because I feel like it would put the Dursleys, like the parental and aunt, uncle Dursley, in a interesting spot, because they, like, so much of their personality is like hating Harry Potter and then pitting their son against Harry Potter. If their son was like, no, like, I, this is, you know, it's on the up and up. He came, you know, whatever, defended him. I feel like Uncle Vernon's like head might explode because he wouldn't know what to do. But it would be interesting simply to see their reaction to that and how they treated Harry and going forward. Because I don't think that they would be like, oh, now you're an idiot too, along with Harry. I feel like they would kind of flip and be like, oh yeah, Harry is not too bad.
Yeah. And also just, you know, completely brave shaking their little bubble of all magic is bad and stuff, and now they're forced in this juxtaposition where their own son is saying like, magic saved me.
Yeah, right.
Like, so like, magic could be used for good and not evil,
right?
And if it wasn't for magic, our son would be like worse than dead right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. I don't know.
Yeah, because again, I have so many fan fiction ideas in my head, and one of them is definitely is, what if like Dudley had shaken from his like been able to see more his parents' BS and be able to strike up a friendship with Harry?
Would have been better for Harry
And then like be able to, like, he's at Smelting's like private school, whatever, and occasionally gets announced like, dear Dudley, I'm studying this, here's a big bag of chocolate frogs at Hop for you.
I mean, like, Dudley is even a bigger idiot, because like, if he did buy into this magical, you know, world, he would have some cool advantages. He probably has some great boxing advantages. Think of the spell you could cast on those gloves. Like, mm-hmm. man, you could knock somebody out in 2 seconds, breaking records. Dudley played this very wrong. That's what
yes, indeed. And I blame Petunia and Vernon.
Yes. Yeah. Ugh.
Alrighty then, and thus concludes our first ever covering of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Tune in next time and we'll go over chapters 3 and 4, The Advance Guard, and number 12, Grimald Place. Catch you guys later. Bye! Bye. Thank you for listening to The Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.